Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 3 of the Rich and Facts Show. I'll be hosting this show by myself today as my co-host Alex Monteverdi wasn't able to make it. But today I'll be featuring a very special guest on the phone who'll be joining us via phone call in just a moment. He is a former correspondent for the Boston Globe, but now he is a writer for The Athletic. He covers the NBA. He is also a member of the National Association of Black Journalists, as well as a rising senior at Suffolk University. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to Clevis Murray. Clevis, how you doing, man?
I'm feeling good, man. I appreciate the great intro. That was very nice of you. But yeah, man, I'm doing good. Enjoying this hot, awesome weather.
Oh, man. So for those of you who don't know, Clevis Murray, like myself, is a Boston native. We both grew up in the Boston area. And it is really hot here right now. We're not used to this kind of weather. We love it when it's here, but it's just like we don't really get this kind of weather that often. So
yeah, man.
We like it, but we're not used to it at the same time.
Exact perfect way to sum it up.
Exactly. Oh man. So Clevis, tell the audience a little about your path in journalism. Like, where does your passion come from? What made you want to get into this business?
Kind of started by accident, I guess. Like, I think I was like in the maybe third or fourth grade. And then I think I really came out watching the NBA. I think the 07, 08, 08, 09 season was when I was like, it's pretty cool. I started following the NBA aggressively. And then I remember mesmerizing stats. I was just like, tried to become the best NBA expert I could in middle school. And then in high school, you know, obviously it carried with me to high school. And I remember, you know, around my sophomore year of high school, I was like the kind of like the NBA extra. I remember at the lunch table, people would ask me for like, what's your input clubs? What's your take? It was like, whatever I said was like gold to them. You know, I had a lot of weight. So that was pretty funny. And then, I just always thought like, you know, I like to write, I like to read. And then Johnson came around. And then I used to have a Facebook page called NBA Flash News. And then that kind of like over time got traction, attention. And then someone asked me to write for their blog, their site, whatever. I wrote for that, and then I just grew from then from that side to that information page that I had to now at Clevis Murray, to like you said, writing for The Athletic, previously working at the Boston Globe. All that in about a 6-year span from a high school sophomore to now a rising, like you said, college senior. So the ride's been fun, the ride's been good. But to me, in my head and opinion, I haven't accomplished anything yet. You know, I'm not like everyone else, just working hard for that full time job. And, you know, just live a good life and just live a life that, you know, I want to have a career doing my passion. So, you know, just working hard. But like I said, I haven't accomplished anything yet. It's just keep going.
Man, you know, that it's funny because I feel like most people that get into sports journalism business, you know, their passion starts at a very young age. And, I mean, 07, so, you know, we're talking about when LeBron got to his first NBA Finals, right? So, like, what was it like watching that?
It was good. It was different. I watched it briefly. You know, I really came out the 07, 08 season with the Celtics. I think that's why. So I do remember watching LeBron 07. I mean, I was, 10 at the time, and I was like, man, this guy's so dominant. And then 11 years later, he's still dominant. So nothing's changed. So it's cool how things come full circle. You know, and then I was in the same, you know, got to interview LeBron. Well, not kind of. Got questions to LeBron, gave me a pretty good response at the Game 7 Eastern Conference Finals. This ride's been cool, but like, yeah, I'm not complacent, not content. Just got to keep it going. I want a full-time job because after graduation, which is next year. So hopefully, you know, I'm blessed, lucky, fortunate to be put in that position that only few college graduates, I guess, can say, especially in this day and age.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult to get a job right out of college. You know, like, it's so competitive. Where are you, what would you like your first job out of college to be?
Probably the NBA easily. My goal is to be like an NBA insider and a guy that writes feature pieces. That's what I typically try to reach out to NBA personnel or network within that games, build that relationship, to build that trust, become a guy that breaks news, you know. But my goal right now for the rest of my life, I guess, obviously things can change over my life, but as of right now, the goal is to cover the NBA, teach stories, and break news.
Man,
if I can do it in Boston, if I can do it based in Boston as well, that's just icing on the cake.
I hear that. I mean, it's, I think that's a fantastic goal, just having the opportunity to just be that. Like, you'd pretty much have a chance to be featured in any show you want to. So talk about, like, as far as, like, yourself covering the NBA, you spoke recently ago how you got to interview LeBron after the Eastern Conference Finals. Just tell us about what it's been like being a writer. I mean, not sorry. What's it been like working for The Athletic and also being a correspondent for the Boston Globe? The type of people you've been able to meet, the type of resources and opportunities you've been able to access. Tell your audience a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, when I was at the Globe, I was at the Globe for about a year and a half, and I remember I really didn't have a role there, so I was like, okay, let me figure something out. And then I kind of became a high school insider, just went from locally to nationally to me like breaking news on like where some of the high school student athletes would commit, when they would have a visit, interest, like serious interest, and then that led to one thing led to another, and I started like connecting more of these high school athletes. They started trusting me, representatives of them that they know started trusting me, and then that was cool at the Globe, so that kind of, gave me more traction as an insider. I don't really do as much anymore because obviously the NBA, and then, so when I finished the Globe, I had to leave the Globe to join the Athletic, and the Athletic, man, they treated me so well. I love the concept, I love the idea, I love how we're not like a traditional newspaper, even though there's a branch of us in about every major city. I really do enjoy my time that way. Like, those people are really nice, really, really innovative, really smart people, great hard workers. It's cool being around like-minded people. I'm only there part-time, but honestly, I would love to be there full-time. I really do like their model and what they're about. It's something that I can only dream of, and I'm living it right now. It's just, like I said, making it full-time or just making that impression, like, Clevis is good, like, let's give him a chance. And they are giving me a chance. So I appreciate it a lot.
And what do you think makes The Athletic different from other newspapers?
I think just mainly that we're primarily online. We're just a sports section. We're pretty cheap when it comes to subscriptions. And I think that from inside looking in, we don't really have like pressure deadlines. Like you always say reporters. That much game story. You see reporters riding during games. The Athletic, we really don't have that pressure. You can take in the entire atmosphere of a post game. You don't have to, make sure we get a quote from the so and so. You can write a game. Like, we do have to write game stories in there, but it's not like we don't have to have it by this time, It's really laid back. I just love everything that they're about. I think that's what makes it different than newspapers. And I think that we're not dependent on advertisers either. I think that's what makes it special. Honestly, The Athletic's only 2 years old. Question is, can it be long term? I think we can be around long term. The sports fans around the world, we keep on expanding. We keep expanding. That shows that people do trust that we're reliable. And I think The Athletic's here to stay. And I know that we're here to stay. And I can only hope and dream that I'm part of the journey going forward.
It's special to be a part of a program like that that's just starting out, and you can say that you're kind of one of the originals, or like one of the founding fathers in a way, right? Because it's only been around for a couple of years. So, tell people a little more about The Athletic, because when you broke the news to me, I'd heard about The Athletic, but I wasn't too familiar about it. So just like, a little bit of, tell us a little more about the company, like you guys.
Oh, yeah, cool. Oh, yeah. Yeah, The Athletic, 2 years ago, it started in the Midwest in Chicago, and then it just slowly expanded. I believe, don't quote me on this, but I think they got an investment which helped them expand even more. If we're being serious, I mean, The Athletic's competitors, the newspapers, their newspapers are scared of The Athletic because, some of the top writers want to join The Athletic. Like, we have Jason Stark, we have Ken Rosenthal, Michael Soto, Jason Lloyd. In Boston, we got, Jake King, Jared Weiss. We got a lot of heavy hitters, and we're not content over here. We ready to grow. We want to dominate the sports industry. We want everyone to know, The Athletic, we're here to say we are that guy. And, we're coming for people in a good way. The competition is always nice, and the competition knows only the best. And I think we've established that we are one of the most premier and best sites. I mean, in only 2 years from a mainstream, major outlet that we break news on, what other outlets done that in 2 years, in a 2 year span? You know, I can't think of anything. Maybe you know, maybe the audience knows, but that's pretty difficult to pull off. And I just think that, man, like, the creators of this, like, they had an idea, they set out for it. I don't know if it's what they expected so early on, but it's good to have this early success. You know, obviously everyone has growing pains, and, you know, we're going through that learning process, but we have some of the best reporters, editors, and two behind the scenes I don't really talk about. I think that's a concoction of success, and I think that's what we're doing right now. That's what we're pulling off. I just hope we keep it going. I know, we were in the news yesterday about diversity, but definitely just try to be diverse, you know. But I really liked and enjoyed my time here. Like I said before, hopefully it lasts long.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the athlete, I mean, for those of you who don't know, Clevis, he is a very well-sourced person, especially in the Boston area. And Clevis, you know, as far as you being able to establish connections with players and coaches and, you know, just executives both in high school and college, like, how have you been able to establish that sort of network?
I think it's just, you know, I just use what's given to me, use what's offered to me. I try to take advantage of things that I don't think a majority of people will take advantage of. I try to just, I mean, I'm a personable person. I like to think I am. I really don't take myself too serious. I like to have fun. You know, some people get more of a limelight, I guess, and they kind of change. You know, people know me, I'm still the same person. I always tell people, like, yeah, I still love Power Rangers and Pokemon. Like, you know, nothing of my interest is going to change. I just think, like, me being relatable, down to earth, basically in the same age group as some of these guys, just builds trust. And, like, even, like, when I have, like, older people that I try to connect with, I'm honest, you know, with my intentions. I tell them what I'm about, with this lifestyle. I try to talk to people, like, that's not really talking about sport. Like, tell me who you are as a person. Like, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. Like, we're all here for a temporary amount of time. You know, there's a lot of negatives in the world that are put into the mainstream. Like, it's talking about the positives that, you know, that are going out. You know, how's the day going? Like, I heard this about you, you know. You tell me a little bit more about that. But things that don't really get talked about a lot, when we talk to, like, I guess, interview subjects, I guess, which is where that subject, the parent subject, I just try to be nice to people. I mean, you know, we have all experienced mean mates, and I try to be positive and caring people to the best of my ability. So obviously as a reporter, I have a job to do, which is to report news to the mass. So obviously I don't let that get in my way, but I just try to be nice and cordial to everyone that comes away, that comes across me, because I think that's the best thing we can do as human beings.
Well spoken, man. And I mean, I know you personally, and it's 100%. It reflects back, and I see that in you too. And you know, it's no surprise to me how you've been able to accomplish so much, and you know, at such a young age. I think you should definitely give yourself a pat on the back for, you know, the type of work that you put in. You know, I mean, I get a lot of my stories and stats and numbers about the NBA from you. So you know, your Twitter's always in my notifications. And you know, you do a lot of good work, man. I want you to understand that.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it a lot, you know. I always appreciate people's, you know, kindness. You know, like, whenever people say, like, anything kind to me, except on my Facebook, social media, whatever, I always try to respond. People try to ask me, which I find interesting, people asking me for advice. I always try to, you know, just give advice, I guess. I mean, I'm still learning, developing as well. I'm taking this ride, you know, very kindly. Because it's cool, like, you know, that people, like, hey, Clevis, keep me advice. I'm going to say, Clevis, keep come on my show. Like, people don't have to do that. They don't have to, because some people would think, like, I'm a stubborn person sometimes. But I think for people to come up to you and just say, like, you know, I appreciate your work. I like what you're doing. I like what you're about. It means a lot to me. I always try to, you know, just represent the people that, you know, aren't really represented. And also, I feel like I'm a product of NBA Twitter. I came up with NBA Twitter, too, which is weird to say. I just enjoy this ride. And plus, I don't know how long this is going to last, you know, because it's hard to get to the mountaintop, but it's always easy to get off the mountaintop. So, you know, I just try to enjoy the ride, because it can be taken away from me at any moment. You know, it's like it's hard to become successful. It's easy to lose it, you know. So yeah, that's really it with me. But just keep working every day, trying to be the best I can be, best reporter, best writer. I have dreams and goals that I hope to accomplish by the age of 30. And it's going to take a doing a lot of work, you know, there's thousands of people that are vying for the same job, same opportunity. And the question is, what are you doing each day to set yourself apart? You know, there's 86,400 seconds in a day. I want to make every single one of those count. The best of my ability, obviously, I want to live life, enjoy time, talk to my friends, but it's like, what can I do to set myself apart today and tomorrow for my future? That's really me in a nutshell.
So, what is the mountaintop for you? What goals are you looking to accomplish by the age of 30?
I think the ultimate goal is a full-time job, covering the NBA. I want to be an insider, and I want to, you know, create those future pieces. I think those two goals for me by 30 is what I want to accomplish on a national level. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. There's going to be bumps in the road. I'm going to be sad. I'm going to be disappointed in myself sometimes. I'm going to be told no a lot of times. The question is, how do I overcome that? How do I get split through the defense to get to the basket? I think those are two goals of mine that I think are attainable and that have kind of started right now, even since I was in high school. The question is, how do I become better at it? How do I get the attention of a few more thousand people? How do I become a guy that people trust? I get older each second, so it's like, you know, just make everything count. And, you know, I keep climbing every single day, just hoping that what I am doing is worth it in the end. And I said earlier, like, you know, I've accomplished nothing. I don't really smile at what I do. It's like, okay, I did what I need to do to achieve what I want to achieve. That's it for me. That's how I get to the mountaintop. Hopefully it's working.
Well said, man. Well said. Yeah, I mean, I don't even have anything to add to that. I see the grind. I see the hustle, and you know, definitely. I think you set yourself up well, at least for right now. You know, I think you're in a good spot. And covering the Athletic is amazing. Just the fact that, you know, I think you guys are a young brand that's gonna, you know, keep growing, and you're all sports, right? So for people that don't want to get into the news and the politics, like, you know, it's cool that they can just have a sports section, and you guys are getting offers from some huge advertisers, so I think that's pretty great.
Yeah, man. You know, the Athletic's been good. I genuinely do love that website. It's an outlet I've read since their first inception, 2016. I just want to be there. I mean, I'm not begging or desperate to be with the Athletic. You know, obviously, when you're put in a situation, you really like it. You want to take advantage of it. But again, if things don't work with them, like, they don't want to put me on full time, it's fine. So it's not the end of the world. Like, you know, there's thousands of other jobs out there. There'll be thousands of applicants for those jobs. The question is, how do I become the one selected? So I think the Athletic, you know, on my resume, the work I put in, what they call me, develop as a writer, shout out to my editors. And then just reading other people's work. Like, how do you do this? What made you do this? You know, asking those intricate questions to pick their brains out. I think that's what makes me a little different. And we're all a little, you know, crazy in the head. I think when you're a little crazy in the head, it makes you a little different, you know. From a reporter perspective, I guess, you know, I think being different is being creative. If you're creative, you're different. So it's a two-way street. It's the same thing, but things have two different meanings. When we look at an NBA perspective, like, Kevin Garnett was a different dude. Like, if someone says, like, he's a different dude in a positive way, you're doing something right, because that means you're not with the norms. You know, you're different. That means you're trying to be remembered for something unique, and that's what I want to be. And then, obviously, you know, this high school journals, right, it's weird that I'm out of high school. It's like, I got people behind me. Maybe they're reading myself. Maybe they're paying attention to me. Let me show them how it's done. And I'm learning from guys that are above me, like H. Scott Blakely, Gary Washburn, guys I've looked up to and read their work since I was in high school. So they've become great friends of mine. Not great friends, but they become, like, you know, mentors to me. So it's all about, you know, I guess, laying the groundwork to make this continuous process grow and just become the best journalist that we can, especially as black journalists in this world. There's a lot of stuff people doubt in journalists. I understand, I'm a sports journalist, but I'm a coach at the end of the day. You know, reporters report at the end of the day. Tell a story, that's the mission at the end of the day. Report the news, report the facts. So, yeah.
Clevis, you know, just this is going really well so far. And I wanted to, you know, with you covering the NBA for The Athletic, I wanted to get your take on, the Eastern Conference Finals. What did you think about that matchup? Did you think the Celtics were going to win that series going into it? You know, how'd you feel when it got to Game 7? What were your thoughts overall on the series?
Honestly, I mean, the Celtics, they were doubted since Kyrie went down late in the season. And, I thought they had a really good chance of beating the Cavaliers because I thought the Celtics were a better overall team than the Cavaliers. Apparently not through seven games. And all credit to the Cavs. I mean, they did what they had to do. And I just want to say this real quick. One thing I really do hate and despise is the criticism, I guess, that the others of the Cavaliers get. I mean, come on, man. At the end of the day, they're NBA players. I understand. Maybe it'd be one thing people would say, like, they, is it there for these Cavalier players? But, I mean, they're doing what they got to do. It's not like they're trying to lose on purpose. They're trying to win. They're in the NBA Finals right now. They're falling away from achieving their childhood dream. Not many people get to achieve their dreams. You know, that's the harsh reality of life also. And these guys could possibly do it by next week or within the next 2 weeks. But the conference is cool. I loved covering it. It's funny because whenever I was on TV asking a question, people sent me like screenshots and all that stuff. It was pretty funny. Actually created a little 4 or 6 minute video about Game 7, just me asking questions and all that. But yeah, Celtics, Game 7, they showed up bad going 6-39 from deep. They could have, it's weird because I don't think they could have done that. That's probably one of the most serious they've ever taken, at least in the postseason game. I think they should change up their offense a little bit. But, you know, you are who you are at the end of the day. You know, you made this part good, what you do best. It's just weird how Celtics and Rockets played pretty much identical. So that was interesting to me throughout the conference finals.
Do you feel like the Celtics left Game 7 on the table? I mean, you said that you feel like the Celtics were a better overall team, but, you know, like, you're saying that we shouldn't have, it sounds like you're saying that we underestimated how good those Cavs players were outside of LeBron.
I mean, LeBron's going to do what LeBron's going to do at the end of the day. He's one of the most dominant players in the game. I just think that the Cavs did what they need to do. I think the Celtics just struggle with LeBron, especially game 6 and 7. So that's really much my take on that.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to me watching, game 7 because they were just hitting, they were just missing so many threes. And, you know, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, like, these guys are just awful. And I just felt like they just needed one of those two guys to have a really good game for them to pull through. And when they kept missing those threes, I felt like they just needed to start attacking the paint, you know, feed Al a little bit. But that just didn't happen, you know? That's what I'm looking at Brad Stevens. Like, I feel like Tatum had it going early on, right? He had it going really well, and I feel like they kind of got away from him for a little bit. I feel like they should have kept feeding the ball. Like, just overall about the game plan, you know, I mean, it's like, what did you think about that?
I do think that Tatum should have gotten the ball a little bit more. But I just think that the Celtics, the way that they played was just team effort. But I guess Tatum's had to go, and you got to play the hot hand. I think Tatum should have got the ball a little bit more at the situation. It shows who the Celtics are. I mean, this is a successful season for them. Even if they lost in the first round, to overachieve and make it this far shows you, like, man, they might be a little scary going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about next season having Hayward and Kyrie coming back. So
yeah, I think the biggest question too is how does Kyrie and Gordon recover from their injuries, especially Gordon Hayward? That's the biggest question mark. Also, do you bring back Marcus Smart? Do you trade Terry Rozier? How does Kyrie Irving's contract work? He opts out, likely probably will opt out next summer. This 2018-2019 season is the season for the Celtics. Then after that, there's just going to be a bunch of question marks each year for this team, and significant changes will probably be made, such as Kyrie Irving's free agency in 2019, Terry Rozier's free agency in 2019, decisions on Al Horford, decisions on Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown extension, Jason Tatum extension. I think this upcoming season is probably going to be the last year or so that we'll see this stuff as much together without any big question marks going forward. You know, Terry Rozier will have a big question mark, so that's about it. Marcus Smart, a big question mark this year. I think this 18-19 year. It's probably the year for the Celtics, and then big decisions are coming after.
So, you know, that's kind of the issue going into this offseason, right? Assuming that Hayward and Kyrie, you know, they come back healthy, and you have Jason Tatum and you have Jaylen Brown in their second and third year, do you start all four of those guys and just have a small lineup for the entire season without playing the five and whichever one of those guys you want to put the four? Like, would you do that, or would you try to what do you do if you're the Celtics right now? Because I feel like they have a lot of guys that sort of play the same position. And I just feel like that could hurt them in terms of them not being able to match up in terms of size if you want to start all four of those guys in your lineup.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Brad doesn't have a choice, I would think, to not start that same lineup that started opening night in Cleveland. Tatum is too good to come off the bench. I mean, I guess you could use him as a sixth man, but that's real tough. That's going to be real tough. And obviously, Kyrie's going to start, Hayward's going to start, Brown's going to start, Horford's going to start. So I think that opening that lineup will stay the same next season. And obviously, I mean, Brad can make a substitute. Like, it's funny how we talk, like, people talk about stars. Like, stars only play about 5-6 minutes to start the game, and then substitutions are made. So I don't think it's the end of the world if that spot does start. I mean, off the bench, you have Marcus Morris coming back. Aaron Baines can likely come back. He'll be a free agent this summer. Daniel Tice is going to be coming back healthier. And I don't know if this helps another big, but I mean, they're pretty versatile when it comes to stretch big, if needed. So I don't think it's going to work for that.
So, I mean, do you bring Marcus Smart? I feel like you got to make a choice this offseason, right? Do you bring back Smart, or do you bring back Terry Rozier?
It's tough because Terry Rozier has said that he wants to become a starter. He's experienced it, and he showed that he can be a starter in this league. If I was Danny Ainge, which I'm not for a reason unless I'm playing NBA 2K, I mean, Marcus Smart is just so much of the intangibles on defense that wins games. He's a winning player. Not to say that Terry Rozier isn't, but he does little things. And with Terry Rozier, I'm a fan of, or, you know, that he's a hard hitter, he's a grinder, he's a shooter. You know, he ain't scared of the moment. It's hard what people think. And that's a big decision. That's one of the big decisions any age is going to have to make. Because you don't want to pay Mark Smart $10 million plus to come off the bench. You don't want to pay Terry Rozier $10 million plus to come off the bench. And plus they have that salary cap situation to handle. But it's going to be interesting to see how does Marcus Smart's free agency go. He'll definitely have multiple teams, you know, interested in him. The question is, what does he think is best for him? Is he a starter in the NBA? There's so many variables to the equation that only GMs and real people that are behind the scenes know.
I mean, Marcus Smart wants his money. He said he's worth more than $14 million, so...
Yeah, and I'll stick to you, like, you know, get the money, get all the money you can, you know, and any job you can, get the money you can.
Clevis actually wrote a piece on Terry Rozier a couple of years ago. I think it was for a fans. I remember you wrote a piece on him a couple of years ago.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it coming. You said this guy was going to break out early into his career.
Yeah, I remember it was Scott Morrison, who at that time was the D-League, now G-League, head coach of the Maine Red Claws, and Terry was talking about him. But he was probably poised for a breakout even last year. I guess I wrote that article a year too early, and he broke out this year. Some guys you can tell, like, they're coming, you know. You know, I tell people all this all the time, like, Victor Oladipo was a guy, you can tell he was coming after his rookie year. The Orlando Magic, you know, I guess gave up on him just 3 years in. Look at him now. He's an All-NBA player, All-Star. I hope this wasn't just a one-year thing. But Victor Oladipo's mentality, I don't think it's going to be a one-year thing. I think he'll be a multi-time All-Star. He just signed a 5-year extension with the Thunder, so he has, I believe, he has 4 years left, so he'll be in Indiana for starting a new decade. Terry Rozier is a guy that's gotten better each year. He's talked about, like, his training staff, his agents. He just gives credit to all of them because they put him in a position to succeed. And now he's one of the premier point guards in the NBA.
I think Terry definitely has. He showed me this postseason. He's worthy of being a star of the NBA. Me and Alex, my co-host, who's not here with us today, he's big on Rozier. And I was like, well, you got to show me in the postseason. I want to see how you can play when, you know, guys are keying in on you and you're not getting the benefit of having, you know, a guy like Kyrie taking the pressure off you and just you having to be the focal point of the offense. I felt like he showed us this postseason that he was able to play well. And when he played well, they usually won. I thought he was a big factor in our offense.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, Terry just did so much. And it's crazy because, you know, he just became the go-to guy. The Celtics trusted him a lot. Teammates trusted him to make plays, take the big shot. And, he, again, like, he just didn't shy away from it. He embraced the moment because this is the moment that he's wanted. And he became one of the best guys at it.
Right. I felt like, I mean, other than Game 7, I felt like Terry really, you know, he put himself on the mat. And that's going to be the challenge with Celtics because, like, if you can't keep both of them, it might be tough to keep one. You know, if you're thinking about trying to hang on to Tatum and Brown and, you know, trying to get those guys extension and, you know, even with Al's contract and eventually you're gonna have to pay Kyrie. So it's gonna be tough. I don't know if they're gonna be able to keep everyone. Like, they're gonna have to let some guys go. Would you try to trade one of those guys to get Anthony Davis?
Or
DeMarcus Cousins in a sign and trade?
I mean, Tatum's untouchable. I think Jalen's gonna have to have an interesting third year to show the development. This is his first year as a starter. Third year show us something. His jump shot came around, his aggressiveness was still there. Locked on defender. I think next year has to be a big year for Jalen. Something to make a decision on it. If he's just a good player, he can become a great player. Anthony Davis, I mean, you have to mortgage a piece for him. I'll be like Al Horford, Jaylen Brown, or Jason Tatum plus a pick, maybe two picks. And I actually believe AD becomes a free agent sometimes, so which probably makes things a little tricky. But I think the Celtics are fine as is. You know, I don't think they really need that traditional big man one because we're going to change the NBA finals. They're not traditional bigs. There's only like four or five NBA teams that have traditional big men. Those are teams that are average playoff teams, which are a huge threat to the Boston Celtics. I think they need to create a team that's mainly for the playoffs and for the finals. And Al Horford, point center, fits the team perfectly, super athletic, very friendly guy. So I think obviously having Anthony Davis would be very nice and accommodate Boston very well. I think Al Horford gets the job done. Obviously he's got up there in age, but he hasn't showed any regression because Al Horford, he's a pretty simple guy. I mean, pass the ball, rebound, creates for others. You only see regression in players that are super athletic or score the ball a lot. Al Horford is pretty athletic, but he doesn't score the ball a lot. So I don't think they need Anthony Davis, unless they can somehow find a clever way to do so. Gordon Hayward, you know, he's coming back next year. Just talking to some people, I don't think Gordon Hayward really has any value, if much at all, because no one knows how he's going to play after that freak injury. So Celtics are pretty actually limited in their trade options this summer, at least, the salary cap, because you want to give the team a goal next year. That's what you've seen the Celtics with so many rookies this season, because they just really don't have the money to afford to buy other notable NBA players. I think this summer you'll see the same thing. They'll probably only target Marcus Smart. The only way you see him sign a notable NBA free agent is if they come to Boston really, really cheap.
Also, just
be very dependent on their rookies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to bring free agents to Boston because, I mean, even though we're a big market, you know, like whether it's the weather, we've gotten those big names recently, like in our recent history, we've gotten through trades, you know, like KG, Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie. Like, we usually have to trade to get those kind of guys to come here. But, you know, as far as, like, Anthony Davis goes, I feel like if you bring him in, you know, you definitely have to trade one of these guys in a mass contract. Like, you talked about how Gordon Hayward, you know, doesn't have much value because we don't know if he's going to come back the same player. So do you think Danny Ainge should make that move and try to move him right now, like kind of what he did with Isaiah Thomas last year, before people find out what he really is?
Will he trade him, Kyrie?
No. Would you do you, I have a little more faith that Kyrie's going to come back better. With Hayward, I think his injury is a little more significant. Would you try to trade one of those guys? Be like, 'cause you know, we talked about, you said you don't really think we need Anthony Davis because assuming all these guys come back healthy, you feel like we have enough firepower. But what if one of those two guys, Hayward or Irving, doesn't come back healthy? You think they might not be. Do you try to move them, one of them, this offseason for a superstar that's healthy right now before people find out how good they really are? Like, I mean, that's a little confusing, but I guess what I'm trying to.
I get what you're saying. I mean, back to what I just said about Gordon Hayward. I don't think Gordon Hayward has any value, if much, around the league just because of his injury and because no one knows how he's going to play off the injury, off a huge injury like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if Gordon Hayward's in trade level of value is pretty low. Kyrie didn't have major knee surgery, so I don't think people are too worried about that. But interesting that this is surgery that Kyrie was reportedly supposed to have to start the season. But Kyrie should be a free agent next year, so that eliminates him, being traded because teams will fair, like, oh, just a 1 year rental. It would be different if this is a team trying to create a super team. Super teams sometimes put this together and try to get at least 3 years back. Kind of like the Chris Paul situation, if you want to be a free agent this year. But I really don't think Kyrie or Hayward have much value right now. Because of Kyrie's contract, Gordon Hayward's contract, plus the question mark about his health.
I mean, yeah, you. I mean, that's true. With these guys, kind of with Hayward having the injury and not sure, how he's gonna come back, and Kyrie being a free agent, having pretty much 1 year left on his deal, it's a risk. It really is a risk. So, but if you keep that team, do you think the team as it is, like, assuming those guys come back healthy, would you say those guys can make a run at the championship next year? Like, do you think they're capable of winning a title with that roster fully healthy?
For sure. I mean, the Celtics, I think, are probably going to be one of the deepest teams in the NBA if fully healthy. If you watch them play, they switch everything on defense. You see Brad, he doesn't care about his players play, but shooting the free ball a lot. Or just having a guy like Terry Rozier guard LeBron James in the post. The Celtics are not scared of switching on defense. I mean, everyone misses a shot. Like, LeBron's going to make 30 shots over Terry Rozier in a row. He's going to miss sometimes. He probably has guys like making it. He's gonna miss it. I'm gonna make it. But I think this team can make a run next year, and I think people are very intrigued on free agency of LeBron James. Where will he go? But I think regardless of what happens in the East, unless the Sixers are comeback loaded, the Sixers to me are the only threat to the Boston Celtics. And anything that LeBron's on, outside of that, the three-man race in the East. But I do think the Celtics will probably be the best team in the East come next season. But obviously, that's too much for me to tell because anything can happen this offseason. So.
Anything. So just going to the Western Conference for a minute, dude, is Chris Paul cursed? Like, I feel like every time this guy gets to the playoffs, something either happens to him or someone on his team ends up just stopping him from getting to the promised land. I mean, like this season, he finally got to the conference finals and you're up 3-2 and you can't play your last two games. And then another year, you're blowing a 3-1 lead to Houston, right? When we thought that let's just either blowing a 3-1 lead or you're hurt or he broke his L. I think he broke his arm a couple years ago against the Blazers, man. Like, what was your take on the Western Conference Finals as a whole? And like, just what happened, man? Like, did you feel like Houston was?
I think with the West Coast Suns, I personally think that Chris Paul played. There's no way. I think the Rockets won Game 6 or Game 7. One, and then second of all, they aren't missing 27 straight threes of Chris Paul. It's not, Chris Paul is going through the basket or taking mid-range jump shots. He takes mid-range jump shots. But I think the Suns are pretty good. I think the Rockets showed the Warriors are beatable. Like they're not as superhuman as many people have thought. Just how Thanos beat the Avengers, the Rockets can beat the Warriors. So they're not indestructible. I think the Rockets gave the blueprint. The Rockets, they always find a way. I'm intrigued as to what they'll do with this free agency. I think the way that team's constructed is pretty interesting. We have iso ball, 3-point dependency, You got Locked On Thunders, they're definitely a 3-and-D guy. I love the way that team's created. But again, people get older, people regress in talent and skill level. And I just think that it's going to be interesting to see how that team comes back next year. There's always going to be another threat in the West and the East. Who will be the new, which team will emerge as that threat? But I think the Rockets show that they are here. They're here. And they have to return Chris Paul. I think that should be a pretty easy negotiation. But like I said before, anything can happen. But yeah, the Celtics Rockets, I think they'll be here for, you know, in that small window before another super team is created entering the new decade.
So, if you're saying the Warriors, or you said we realized the Warriors were vulnerable this season. What was different about this year? You know, I thought coming into the season they were just bored, right? You know, they were just tired of kicking around the competition, and they didn't take the regular season seriously. But when the playoffs started, you know, they were challenged. Like they took out the Spurs in five, but the Spurs were competitive even without Kawhi Leonard. The Pelicans were competitive, and even the Rockets, like them going to seven. Like, what do you feel like something's changed with their style of basketball? Like, what's going on with them now?
I mean, you do see, I don't know the stats, but you see a little more Kevin Durant isolations. And I think that the Warriors bench, I don't think is as dominant as it used to be, because you don't have Ian Clark this year. Iguodala's been hurt. You don't have Patrick McCaw because he's been hurt. I think because of the Warriors bench, really. I mean, honestly, I don't think the Warriors are that different than last year. I think this team is still one of the most dominant teams in NBA history. I just think it's just they just been hurt like everyone else. No Iguodala, no McCaw, probably limited minutes for the rest of the guys. I think in the finals, I mean, no Iguodala for tonight. I think the Warriors are still, I think they're still be fine. As long as you have that core four, it's going to be tough for anybody on any given night. So I think every team struggles, but I think they'll be fine at the end of the day.
I mean, as far as the NBA Finals goes, what's your take on, how do you feel about Cavs-Warriors Part 4? Do you think this is good for the NBA, seeing these guys go at it 4 years in a row?
It's funny, because people always say, well, no one's in the world or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll see. We'll watch this Finals might make some record numbers when it comes to viewership, especially because no one's been talking about this. The NBA partnered YouTube on this, so there will be more viewers on this.
Yeah, YouTube TV's out there now.
Yeah, so I think the viewership will be that people will watch. People do want to watch the game of basketball, especially when they play finals. I mean, the main attraction of the two best players in the NBA is LeBron James and Kevin Durant. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. People are probably going to watch to see either the Warriors fail or the Cavs fail. You know, it's weird how people decide to see you fail. So people will probably watch that just to see that. I would like to see the Cavs win it, but I think LeBron does way too much for that team. But I think the advantage that the Cavs do have is their bench. And I think we might see a lot of Larry Nance this series. I think Larry Nance would be pretty ideal as a big man for the series. A lot of Jeff Green maybe this series. I wouldn't expect the Cavs to put a lot of words, LeBron, Nance, Green, Smith, and maybe Rodney Hood, because that's a big lineup. Those are guys that can lock up. I think that's a pretty good lineup against the Warriors, especially. Because Rodney Hood hasn't really played much in the playoffs. I think against the Warriors, it's been pretty good. I would like to see the Cavs win the series. But I'm picking Warriors in... I hate doing these predictions, too. Chances are I'll be wrong.
Go for it.
I'm going to say Warriors in four.
So you think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep?
I think it'd be I think it'd be a sweep. Yeah, I think Warriors are going to sweep the Cavs. Here's how it's going to go. The Warriors are going to win the first two games, right? It always goes like that. The Warriors win the first two games. Games three or four, I think the Warriors will take, but I think the Cavs will probably play with a sense of urgency, and they'll probably win game three or four. Warriors, at least maximum, Warriors in five. Max. I don't see if this goes over 6-7. I guess the Cavs are a pretty big chance.
And see that's kind of my I do think it's interesting how, viewership, right? That tells part of the story because people are gonna watch. Like you said, people want to see the two best players. They want to see LeBron. They want to see KD. People want to see Steph Curry too. We're talking about the top three, four players in the NBA right now. And even though it might look like a one-sided matchup, we still want to see that star talent. And like you said, it's like people want to see. We watch villains. Make leagues. I feel like we sometimes you just watch because you want to see another team go down, right? We want to see, can this dynasty or this dominant team, can anybody take them down? But I think it's funny how you have two villains now, right? Because the Warriors have won enough titles and been there enough where you got a lot of people that are tired of seeing them. And I mean, I feel like LeBron James has as many supporters as he does haters, right? Like this guy, he can't get enough hate.
Yeah,
But
that's true.
as far as that goes, like, do we want to see a sweep? Like, I want to see a series go, six, seven games. I think the Warriors are gonna run them out of the gym in the first two games in Golden State. I think they're gonna run them out of the gym, and then when they go home for game three, I agree with you. I think with them being at home, I think the supporting cast will rise up and they'll have a really big game. I think LeBron will. I don't think I don't. It's not that I feel like LeBron's gonna go off more at home than he will go and say. I just feel like the other guys will, they'll be able to chip in a little more. And I think they'll get one of those two games in Cleveland. I think they'll get game three in Cleveland. They'll compete harder, very hard in one of those two games in Cleveland. But I'm gonna say Golden State in five, man. I think Golden State is a little bit vulnerable, and I almost feel like if this were like hockey or even like football, where it's like one game or even college, the NCAA tournament. I might actually give Cleveland that because this feels like one of those situations where the underdog is being played up so much that they end up just playing out of their minds, right? Like one of those Cinderella stories, but I don't think it's gonna. I mean, this is the NBA, so you got to beat the guy four out of seven tries, and not against that roster.
Yeah, man, that's why I think the Warriors are probably doing this pretty handily.
And then after that, if you're LeBron. Where do you go next season? What do you think he's going to do in the off season?
No one knows what LeBron's going to do. I don't know. I mean, he's obviously going to make the best decision for himself and his family. I'm not a fan of predicting where people will go. I'm not a fan of predicting where people will go, but I'm making predictions for you. I'll say this, I think he'll stay in Cleveland. I mean, why? Unless he'll stay in Cleveland if this team is reconstructed well. LeBron's aware that he does a lot for this team. And I know, I think deep down he knows it. He needs, and in this era of winged players and guard play, he needs another dominant guard. Kyrie was that for him, and he lost Kyrie, and he told Reggie Nichols, like, I don't want Kyrie traded. So the Cavaliers have to find a way to either free up cap space and find a guy like maybe Paul George in the summer, or just acquire a dominant guard. I think one or the other, if it's another forward or another guard, probably help LeBron stay in Cleveland. If it's the same roster, it might motivate him to go elsewhere. And that probably mean, like, because the Cavs are just tying in so much in cap space that they're going to have to make a decent amount of trades. So I wouldn't describe the Paul George at the top of their list. Because if you get a Paul George commitment, then you get a LeBron commitment. But does Paul George want to go to Cleveland? Does he think he can have a better roster elsewhere? So it's a lot of variables to the equation that no one really can answer, but the players themselves. That first week of July, we'll be getting answers that we've been talking about all year round. So I can't wait for free agency. It's always a fun time of year. At least for the media and the viewers, I know it's a pretty difficult time for the players themselves, the coaches themselves, because it's real life. You're switching jobs, really. So I think that's the perspective that people should have about the sports industry as well. Because even though it's a sport, it's also a job. Like, when people get fired, they get fired. You know what I'm saying? Because they make millions of dollars doesn't mean anything. I mean, when you're, like, money goes, like, you can't take money with you to the grave. It goes away. So I like, that's the concept that people think in. Like, this is their livelihood. It's kind of like talking about when reporters get fired. Like, because nobody's not supporting that fired. If a coach is fired, it's like, okay, he deserves to get fired. Like, no one deserves. I mean, yeah, some people do deserve to get fired if their work is horrible. In sports, coaches.
No, I like your take. I think you bring in a really interesting angle, and I mean, I'm talking to a part a journalist. Like, you know what it's like to be in there. I've had my experience, at my internships, being able to watch these journalists go out and see how they do their handle their business on a day-to-day basis. It's a tough industry, and if a player leaves, like LeBron brings jobs to Cleveland, right? Reporters are
He
getting
lost the
hired.
money.
Like people get to have opportunities in that community, especially in the sports industry, because you have a superstar like LeBron. If he leaves, then the market's not as interesting because, okay, who do we want to cover now? Like, Kevin Love's not going to make people want to be a reporter in Cleveland or an insider. He'll probably be gone too if LeBron leaves. They'll probably trade him in, management over there. Who knows what they'll do if LeBron leaves.
No, you're right, LeBron. And LeBron's aware of how much power he has. He's aware of all these narratives. He's aware of the impact that he has on people's lives. He's aware of it. But again, he's going to do what's best for him and his family because that's what's most important for him at the end of the day. And I personally do think he'll probably stay in Cleveland if this roster is constructed, if they get another wing or guard player to help him out. But yeah.
So, as far as going after a guard or wing player, if you can't get Paul George, you think the Cavs would try to make a play at Terry Rozier?
I don't think. I mean, unless Terry Rozier starts averaging 20 points a game, I don't think he's going to be the definitive answer for that. I think the Cavs need another superstar, just LeBron James, or it could be like an athletic, an athletic guy. Like I don't know, like throw Anthony Davis. Even though the Pelicans, under no circumstance, will be trading Anthony Davis. But yeah, I just can't think of any other free agents that are attractable. Obviously, they tried the Isaiah Thomas experiment. That didn't work out in their favor. But yeah, I think via trade, and I don't know if some of these Cavaliers have any high trade value. Kevin Love probably has the most value. Or no one's talked about this yet. The number 8 pick. Obviously, a rookie's not going to become a transcendent star right away. Do the Cavs keep the pick? Do you use that pick and package Kevin Love? That's another possibility. Like, there's just so much that goes on in these rooms that no one knows. That's why I think the number 8 pick probably has a lot of value. This is a pretty deep draft. I feel like they think it's a pretty good draft. So the Cavs will be having options come draft night.
Do you think they can? I mean, if they do something with that 8th pick, I feel like it's tough because you don't know if LeBron is going to stay. So I think whether he's like, if you're the Cavs, how do you handle this offseason though? Because you don't know if he's going to stay. So do you draft the player that you potentially think is going to be your franchise guy going forward, assuming LeBron? Like, do you take it as if LeBron's going to leave, or do you move as if he's going to stay? Because you're talking about packaging a pick and Kevin Love, but the draft comes before free agency. So, if you're Cleveland, you really have to think about that. Like, who do I invest in?
Yeah, I think the Cavs will probably, I think they just pick the best player available. Another thing, too, is LeBron's going to be 34 this upcoming season, so he's not getting any younger. So I think they'll do the best thing available for the team. If it's Michael Porter Jr., if it's, I don't know, Trae Young, Jaren Jackson Jr., Wendell Carter, Kevin Knox, one of those guys, like, someone's going to end up in Cleveland that's going to be a pretty high-name player, high profile, but they won't be. They won't. I don't think any rookie in this draft that's around that 8 range be having a dominant rookie year. So yeah, plenty of options. I mean, I can only speculate and guess, but that's up to their GM. Hope you out, man.
Definitely. I do think deep down, LeBron would rather not leave. I think he's comfortable there. I think he's got a lot established in Cleveland. His family, that's where he's from. He has a lot of camps that he does down there, a lot of charities. Like, I think like that's I think he'd prefer to stay there and have guys come to him. And I mean, playing in the East, he knows he's got the Eastern Conference on lock, man. Like, this year was a lot tougher to get there. Maybe he'd have the supporting cast he's had in a couple years, but he's the best player in the conference, and we've seen now, like, you just give him a, it doesn't have to be great help, just give him like a decent amount of help, and you can still win this conference. So, I think he'd rather stay in Cleveland. If he left Cleveland, I think Philadelphia, because he'd still be in the Eastern Conference, and it's kind of like a KD thing where you go from OKC to Golden State. Not only do you join a better team, but you also weaken the team that you're leaving. So you kill two birds with one stone. Now the conference is even that much easier because you leave Cleveland falls apart, and now Philadelphia is like instant title contender, right? With Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. That'd be interesting, Ross. What would you think about that setup, though? I feel like that might hurt Ben Simmons in his growth.
I don't know. I mean, I think people overestimate, like, oh, having such players and have this players about it. You got better in the summertime. You know, LeBron's not going to hurt benching in the summer development. I think, you know, having the best players on the floor, you see it. I mean, you know, the game isn't all about, at the end of the day, it's about put the ball in the basket. But his benching has become like a shooter, you know. I think that's going to be the best thing for him is getting a jump shot. He's going to be playing the best player in the generation. Can you shoot if you get LeBron James? I don't think, you know, LeBron's going to hurt Ben Simmons in any way. I think, unless Ben Simmons doesn't have a jump shot. But we've seen LeBron play Dwayne Wade, who never really had a jump shot. So I think it'll be fine if they go there.
Yeah, Ben, I mean, like you said, the summertime is, that's kind of when these guys. Right, like that's when you really got to put in the work and go from A to B. But I just feel like for Ben Simmons, you know, he's a ball dominant player, right? Like he's not, you know, like he's not the type of guy that like when you want to play without the basketball, I think it helps when you have a jump shot. LeBron was able to make it work with Dwayne Wade, but you know, I feel like Ben Simmons is more of like a point, like he's more of like a point guard, point forward. And if you want to play that position, you don't have a jump shot. You know, it can be difficult to have a guy like LeBron. You know, that's going to be very ball dominant. Because I mean, LeBron might say he wants to play without the ball, but do you really think he wants to play without the ball? Do you really think he wants to be in a system where he's going to move without the ball? I think he wants the ball in his hands. Like that's how LeBron's always wanted his whole career. He wants to be the facilitator.
I mean, unless that's a direct quote from LeBron. I mean, it's all speculation. I really don't know. I mean, having another dominant guy that can handle the ball like Dwayne Wade did, I think helped LeBron a lot because it just took some responsibility off him that I think every player loves having another great player next to him. So I think that's what LeBron wants. If he wants to stay off the ball, sure. I mean, that'd be better for him because he's got to worry about all the pressures of it. But it's just about getting whatever team he signs to pull that off.
Speaking of this draft, though, do you see any guys in this draft that you think could be transcendent players in the NBA?
Maybe I guess DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic. I guess those type of guys. It's hard to tell because I'm not just too fond of like overhyping guys in the draft. Just take the best player available and just hope they can develop. Because I mean, Draymond Green's a pretty transcendent player. He's taken pretty late in the draft. Stuff like that, you just don't know. You really can't predict.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like every year, you know, the talk is this draft is deep, this draft is deep. And then, you know, you get to the draft and you're like, well, it's the same thing every year. And you might, I mean, this year was special. This rookie class was special. Tatum, Donovan Mitchell. And I mean, we call Ben Simmons a rookie, even though he's really not a rookie. But just the performance of guys actually playing in their first year, I think, was very special. But you know, you really never know who's gonna come out and who's gonna show up, and you know how these guys can translate their game on an NBA level.
Yeah, no, that's how it is. It's hard to judge that type of stuff.
I did want to ask you another question. I'm trying to remember what I wanted to ask. Man. So we talked Celtics, we talked Warriors, we talked Rockets, we talked Cavs, LeBron. Oh man. We got a lot of good footage. I mean, I think we got some good stuff. For sure.
Yeah, man, we talked about it a lot. It's been over, what, an hour or so? So
yeah,
we talk about what we want to do.
Nah, absolutely, man. Yeah, I definitely gotta yeah, this was some good stuff for sure. Clevis, I really appreciate you taking the time, you know, to do this interview for me. Like, this is great. Oh, let me add this. Folks, you know, just tuning in. I mean, for folks tuning in, follow Clevis Murray at Clevis Murray on Twitter. He's on Instagram. He's on Facebook as well. The guy is a rising reporter, and he is already very special. He's going to be very special. He's going to be even more special in the future. So, you know, follow him. Great insider for the NBA as well as high school sports and college sports. You'll get a lot of great content from this man. So, you know, take my word for it.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate that a lot, man. You know, we're going to ride together, you know. Gotta make it a time somewhere to miles of team. Let's tangle.
Absolutely, man. It was fun interviewing you. I'm glad. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to meet with me. And you push it in. You inspire me too. I want you to know that too. Like, you know, I always, when I'm seeing you on social media, I'm like, all right, Rich, you know, let's go kill it today. You know what I mean? Let's get some content out there. Let's start planning for how, you know, I'm gonna build my brand and you know, get my career going as well.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that a lot, man. It's really, like you said, know who you inspire and all that. I just like, you always want people to succeed, and you know, me and you are basically, you know, the same age group. So, you know, we just gotta ride together, man. I love that you're working hard, you know, me and you've had private conversations over food, talking about like what we wanna do, all that type of stuff. And it's like, you know, you got that work ethic, you know. I like that, you know, you're not just sitting down like, man, this isn't happening to me. Like, you're like, no, okay, this is a struggle right now, you know. I'm still living, I'm still breathing. There's another day tomorrow. You know, I can still achieve my dream. It may not happen now, but it'll happen sometime soon if I work hard enough. And you have that mentality, you have that work ethic, and, you know, if you keep going with that, you know, you achieve the dream and the goal that you want.
I appreciate that, man. You know, we're going to be there to support each other and help each other out for sure. And, you know, for those, last, let me point this out for my audience. So Clevis is going down to Arizona Sunday. He is going to do a 10-week internship program for the Arizona Republic as a it's a fellowship position. I'm trying to remember exactly.
Pelican fellow. I'll be there. Sponsorship position. I'll be in the sports department. Yeah, Sunday's a big day. That's funny because I have like hotel madness going on. Me and my mom are like, I want to be in this hotel. She wants me to be in this hotel. So, Sunday's a big day.
Oh, man. Oh, so you have to, are they providing you with the hotel?
Nah, man. I'm paying for the hotel myself. I'm paying for my plane ride down there myself. It is what it is. You know, it's an experience I'm getting. But, I'm excited about it. It's a new opportunity for me. Not just, you know, when it comes to journalism, but also, becoming a young adult, living by myself, real responsibilities. And, you know, I'm going to struggle some days. You know, there's going to be some days where I'm like, man, I wish I was back home. But, I mean, it's going to be part of the going. Like, I don't know why people are still afraid to struggle. You know, when you struggle, you learn. So it's going to be a learning experience for me, inside and outside the newsroom.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can't listen to that voice in your head that tells you, no, I can't. You know, you just, you know, I think fighting fear is it's a battle that we all go through. And, you know, if you can embrace the struggle and look at it like a teaching experience instead of like, oh my gosh, I gotta get away from this, then I think it can do a lot for you in life. You know, like you said, inside of journalism, especially in journalism, because we know how tough this business is, right?
Oh yeah.
You know, we're trying to build our own brands right now, so we know what the grind is like. It's not a 9-to-5 job at all.
Yeah. Yeah. 24 hours, 365.
So exactly. Man, it's like we live and we breathe what we do, for sure. But you know, it's fun. It's fun. And man, yeah, like I said, Clevis, I'm gonna close out this interview by just saying, you know, thanks again for being on the show, man. Down in Arizona, we're still gonna be talking, you know what I mean? I'm gonna be checking in on you and whatnot, see how you're going, and you know, hopefully I can get you on here again for another show if you ever have a couple minutes.
Yeah, of course, man. Me and you been trying to get this done. You know, wherever you need me, you know, be on the show, do whatever you want me to do for you. Yeah, you know, I'm always down for it. It's always timing, but That's every day. I'll try to always help out in your success.
Man, I appreciate it, man. I'm gonna have fun editing this for sure.
Oh yeah, man. No problem. Good luck with that.
Yeah. I'm not just releasing the whole thing. I'm still getting used to this recording equipment, but you know, fun stuff. And like I said, you know, great interview, and we'll keep pushing forward, man. Good luck in Arizona. I know you're gonna do great things down there. You're gonna have to learn. I mean, do you know how to cook at all?
Not at all. Yeah, it's funny because I've been looking at hotels. Like, all right, who offers free breakfast? Who offers free this? Free that? You know, I don't know how to cook. You know, hopefully, I don't eat a lot anyway. So I'll probably just be living off like Nature Valley bars or whatever. I'll probably find like a Roach Brothers or Whole Foods or whatever the equivalent is down there. I eat pretty healthy for the most part. I'm gonna be spending a lot of money, which is gonna suck. But hey, maybe I should learn how to cook. Maybe I can find someone there to help me learn how to cook. One of the fellow interns, so I'll be fine.
Yeah, man, I'm still trying to teach myself. I had to do that one time when I was in D.C. for a semester, but it's been a while, so I'm trying to have my mom, you know, teach me again, you know, to kind of knock the rust off, because when you can cook, you save so much money on food. Yeah, but I mean, if you're a journalist and you don't like to eat, and you're not a big eater, that's good, because, you know, you're on the road a lot, so the less you have to stop by a drive-thru, the better.
Yeah, probably that, too, because I see so many damn big journalists, I'm like, I'm a big dude. Well, mainly because, you know, I entered college, but I don't know, man. I'm like, nah, I can't be that big. So I try to maintain my weight to a certain threshold, I guess. So yeah, that's really my weight story right there too.
Right. Oh man, we're young, but we gotta be a little careful too, because like those pounds can add up quick.
Trust me, man. You ain't telling no lies about it.
But all right, Clevis, man, great having you on the show. I'm going to conclude the Rich in Facts Episode 3 show now by saying, hey, thanks a lot, Clevis, man. Always a pleasure to have you on, man. And, you know, good luck in Arizona. I know you're going to do great things down there, and I can't wait to hear about, you know, the journey throughout the process, man. And good luck. Study up on your baseball, too. When you come back from that, you'll probably be an expert, though. So, you know, it'll come. Just take it a day at a time, brother.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Rich. You too. Keep working. I appreciate it. Anytime you need me on the show, just give me a head up.
I appreciate that, man.
All right, man. See you.
Take care.